D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by Sportsnet, NHL Insider, Elliot Freeman, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast as well. Elliot, the comments that Barry Trotz made on this station a couple of days ago have crossed our northern border. They've been talked about quite a bit, not just here in Nashville. I've heard it talked about on Sportsnet many times. I know you've listened to that interview every week. You've said it. What are people around the league that you keep in touch with saying about those comments specifically made by Barry Trotz a few days ago?
Well, first of all, they're still saying it is the second best hockey hit of the week on the station. I want everyone to be well aware of that. You know, I think this. I think that it just shows that more was expected, more was hoped for. Nobody is happy with where things really began. Barry has said on that hit previously that he's looking for a center, and a top six center is very hard to find. I don't think those are very easy things to do. You know, one of the things I think, though, is I kind of got the impression that the way we're interpreting them is slightly off. Like, I don't think he's going to rip down the foundations and do a total rebuild. I don't think, like, some people kind of, and you guys tell me if you think I'm wrong about this, but the impression I got was that that's not what's on the table. It's simply going to be that some of the players who are in Milwaukee might get their chances sooner than expected.
Yes, I would agree with
that.
No question.
Like, it's not like he's ripping down the organization. But, you know, the one thing I do think is that, number one, he's not afraid to be bold. So if something bold that he thinks makes sense dropped on his lap, I believe he would do it. But I don't know. I'm trying to look and see, like, who's that player that's available that solves his problem? And I'm not sure that I see an obvious path to that player at the 2C spot.
My question, Elliot, as well, is we know that in this particular league, coaches have short leashes when it comes to struggling. We saw last year what happened with the Edmonton Oilers. They started 2-9-1. They fired Jay Woodcroft when they were 3-9-1. Chris Knobloch comes in, best record in the league the rest of the way, within one win of winning the championship. Should we have any reason to believe that Andrew Burnett should, I'm not saying he's on the hot seat, but if he's on the burner, is it turned up to one? Is it turned up to two? Where should we see Andrew Burnett in all of this?
Well, I would say that, I did not get the impression that Andrew Burnett is in trouble. You know, Barry Trotz was a coach. He understands coaching. You know, I don't think that he's the kind of guy that's going to go out and say, all right, at the first hint of trouble, this guy's out. But I think there is a recognition that this isn't what anyone wanted. This isn't what anyone expected. And if things don't get better, you know, I would say the burner can always become a little crispier, Adam. So, the thing about Trotz is he's a really good guest on your radio station. And I think sometimes it's as important to listen to tone as it is the actual words of what he's saying. And you guys know him. He's calm. He's measured. He doesn't fly off the handle. But what I am hearing is that he's a little bit exasperated. He's a little bit disappointed. This was a season of very high expectations. And, I keep a stat, okay? November 1st of every year, after games on November 1st, four or more points out of the playoffs. In full seasons in the salary cap era, there have been 70 teams who've been four or more points out of the playoffs on November 1st, and 10 have made it. And this year there were two, Nashville and Chicago. Now, I think that the Predators are good enough. I look at their talent. I really like them. But there's no question that it's been disappointing. It's no question that everyone is struggling to find a spot at that number two center position behind Ryan O'Reilly. There's been too many games like that one the other night. Not last night. I thought you guys actually played really hard and probably deserved a better fate. But more the Monday game against the Kings. You know, like you're out of runway for bad games now. And or performances that aren't acceptable now. And what I sensed was like a little bit of exasperation. Like I can't believe, like almost like I can't believe we're in this position. And the longer that goes, the more the scrutiny and the spotlight and the heat gets put on everybody.
Elliot Friedman is with us. And Elliot, I think it's a good point that you make because I think you listen to most, if not all, of the interviews. I think it's so easy, especially in the world we live in, if somebody takes a sentence out of a Barry Trotz interview, and you know Barry Trotz well, he is going to give you lengthy, detailed, nuanced discussion. But
yes,
if you pull one word, one sentence out there, and it includes rebuild, then you're not really getting a full picture. It is like my English teacher, if I tried to read just the Cliff Notes, and then my teacher said, okay, here's the pop quiz, and I'm just going to tell you right now, if you read the Cliff Notes only, you're going to fail this quiz. You know, there is something to reading the whole article or listening to a whole interview and not just taking one clip.
Well, Willie, you just explained why my high school grades were so bad.
Well, I was right along with you, I think.
I think that's true, and I think it's important. You know, we live in a world right now where there's a lot of clickbait. There's a lot of give me one sentence or headline that can bring eyeballs to whatever it is I've done. And I, you know, sometimes I'm as guilty about that as anybody else, but I really try to overcome it. And, you know, I really like the interview Barry does on your station. I've told you guys before, I think that, you know, the Nashville hockey fans are well served by it. There's not a lot. Like, it used to be that every GM in every city had a weekly interview on some radio station, whether it was a sports station or somewhere else. It was normal. Now that's the exception rather than the rule. Unfortunate for us all in a lot of different places, but very fortunate for the hockey fans of Nashville. And I think that Trotz gives you a real window into what he's thinking. But as you said, he's a deep guy. He's a thoughtful guy. And you better be willing to listen to more than one sentence with him. Like that's the thing. Like, I saw his quotes and I was like, wow, that's really something. And then I went and I listened to it and I was like, nah, it's not really what he's saying here. But I think it's important to recognize that this is a guy who is trying to do something. The problem is what he's trying to do is one of the hardest things in the NHL to do, find a top six center.
I would grant you, Elliot, that they've got a lot of things to fix. Adam and I have debated about the stat that you throw out there, the November 1st, because I think the Predators would have been, I think you just said it, they were 31st or something last year at 5-10, and then we know what happened after that. They figured some stuff out.
That was earlier, but yes, I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, but you can't, so you never know what's going to happen, and it's not a good place to be. I think we all agree on that. They have a lot to deal with here. But I guess one of the things I wonder about that stat is how many of those teams going into the season had playoff expectations, and how many are maybe taken off the top as teams that you kind of know were rebuilding and had no chance to begin with, or I don't want to say tanking because Gary Bettman might get mad at me, but you know, there are teams that kind of go in knowing they're not going to make it, and they're probably in that club of teams that are four or more points out on November 1st.
Well, I would say that, first of all, I don't have a problem with using tanking. The commissioner's mad at me all the time, so I don't mind doing that. You know, I think this. I think that there have been teams, like Edmonton was one of those teams last year, and they came back and they still made it. I remember there was a year where Anaheim was really good, or supposed to be, and they had a really bad start, and they came back and they made it. I would say the vast majority of them are bad teams, Willie, but still, like, if you fall apart there, it's hard because of the loser point. It's really hard to catch up in this league. There's no other league that rewards overtime losses like this. Baseball doesn't do it. The NBA doesn't do it. I mean, you saw the look on Baker Mayfield's face the other night when they lost the coin flip to the Chiefs. Like, he knew what it meant. And so, that makes it harder to catch. And the more teams that you get between you and that spot, the more trouble it is. You know, I think the Predators are still good enough. By no means do I think that their season is over. But they've dug a hole, and you can sense Trotz's disappointment for it. Now, one thing I've been kind of curious about is that one of the successes that the Predators have had in the last year was, you know, Andrew Burnett asked Josi to, you know, pass the puck up more, or headman the puck up more, as opposed to carrying it. And I couldn't watch last night because I was doing a charity event, but I heard you guys played better. You know, one of the things I've kind of wondered about is there any chance they kind of go back to that a little bit, where maybe to get things going while things are struggling, they kind of give Josi a little bit more freedom. I'm curious to see if you've seen any of that.
I haven't. I think one of the things that is going on is I think that Brady Shea is going through what Roman Josi went through last year. And on top of that, playing with Roman Josi in and of itself, I think, is different, right? I think those two are still figuring each other out. And Brady Shea is trying to play a completely different system than he did with Carolina. And Elliot, as you know, that's a unique system as well. And he's played in that for a long time.
I'd also throw in the partner that Brady Shea played with in Carolina for the past several years, Brett Pesce, is probably the antithesis of Roman Josi as a player when you think about the way they approach the game.
So I would say, Elliot, that's a big issue as to why they're struggling a lot 5-on-5. But they do believe that over time, and hopefully they won't run out of time, that they will get through. Just like Roman Josi busted through last year and had a great year, they believe that Shea and Josi will get it on the same page and they will be better for it.
Well, I agree with that. And the other thing too is, because it's your captain and your franchise player and your top defensive signing who you signed for a few years, you have to be committed to it. Like, that's like one of the big challenges a team faces when it's going through what the Predators are going through, is that, you know, you all of a sudden you're losing, you're falling behind, the pressure's mounting, and you run out of patience. You're like, we have to stop with this. We have to try something else. And the challenge with that is you sign Shea for this specific reason, and you have to be committed to letting him figure it out. And I think there is something to be admired by the Predators kind of sticking with it, because I think a lot of other teams might have said, we got to do something else here. And you're committed to it, so you do have to stay with figuring it out. But that was the other thing I wanted. I went back to one of my columns last year where Burnett talked about what Josi was asked to do differently. And it's another one of those things. It worked for you guys last year, but sometimes I think, okay, we're struggling this year. What do we have to change, and do we go back to that? And I guess it's not happened yet, and maybe it won't happen. Maybe they say, no, this is still the right thing to do. But as you know, guys, desperate times sometimes call for desperate measures.
Yep, it is a big topic. And Stamkos and Marchessault, along with Shea, are all trying to find themselves here, and they have not figured it out yet. So, Elliot, I do want to ask about another goaltender.
I got your text.
Okay.
I got your text.
And I don't know if you had a chance to go back and research it.
I did.
I hear you guys talking about on your podcast on 32 Thoughts a lot – about goaltender interference, and it's never going to be perfect. We all know that you're never going to have everybody satisfied. But there were a couple things that I thought were interesting. It's a unique play last night.
Yes.
It starts by saying the puck goes in the net, and they decide on the ice it's no goal. And I know you guys talk about that a lot of really should that ever – not there are times where it's obvious, but if it's not obvious, shouldn't the call on the ice be a goal? And then let's go figure out if it's not a goal. So let's start with that.
I can't start with that because I – first of all, when I saw the play last night, like I said, I was at a fundraiser last night, so I couldn't watch the game live. But when I got your text, Willie, that War and Peace that you sent me last night, I immediately went and I went to the game and I turned it on my app and I started looking through it and I was like, oh boy. And – you know, I'll say this. This has been a crazy week for review. There was that play in Colorado-Seattle, which I've never seen before. And ultimately, they got that one right, but the process wasn't very good. There was the goal that was allowed to stand in Winnipeg-Tampa, which I really disagreed with. I disagreed with that one a lot. And when I first saw the one-year game last night, I thought it should have counted. I thought it should have been a goal. And the one thing too is if it's a guy's first NHL goal too, and that was supposed to be his first NHL goal, like I really think it should be a goal. Like if you think you scored, I feel terrible for a guy who loses it. The one thing I was reminded about this week is that when video review came in, the standard that the commissioner asked for was only change it if you're dead wrong. And I've heard that everybody's been kind of reminded about that. And I guess, and still, like I said, Willie, I think that should have been a goal. I do. I guess they felt that it wasn't dead wrong. Now, I think the point you make is interesting. Because I do think the league wants goals. You don't want to be taking goals off. And maybe that's an interesting theory to do. But if you're a referee and you're wired and told, make the call you see, and they're told, don't guess. If you're not sure, don't call it, because that leads to embarrassment. Make the call you see. And if you see no goal, then you have to make that call.
But they didn't make a call. They also kind
of eventually
waited.
They have to make a call. They said no goal, right?
Well, after huddling up, they blew the whistle, and the ref standing on the net doesn't really say it's in. Doesn't really say no goal. They huddle up and say no goal. And what I found out today is they told the Predator bench they thought Marchessault pushed Logan Thompson, the goalie, into the crease or push them back across the goal line. But when they came out with no goal, the explanation from the league's email said that it was Delgado that impeded his ability to play his position. So that's another question I always have is if you're making a call of no goal and you say it's Marchessault and then you go in and you're going to turn around and say it was Delgado, then something's wrong with that too.
Yes, there is something wrong with that. Like I said, I looked at that and I thought that should have been a goal. Now, one thing I think that's gone on is this has been a really bananas week, and the general managers meet next week in Toronto. It's not their big meeting. It's a short meeting. It's a 3-hour meeting, and I do think all of this is going to come up. I do think there's going to be a conversation about video review and where it is and where they want it to go. And I really work hard at trying to understand these calls. I have spent way between the Winnipeg one and the Colorado-Seattle one and the Islander one and this one this week. I have spent way too much time on the phone with people who do not want to talk to me. And I think that the end of it, like I said, I thought your goal should have been a goal. And I think at the end of the day, this is going to be a big conversation next week about where we are and where we're going.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast, joining us on D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys, take care. Where's D-Maze this week? Where's he?
Hey, I'm here, Adam.
I'm
Adam.
Here.
Yes, Adam's on the air. Elliot, I'm here.
I was wondering, did I put you to sleep? Were you back in Cancun? Like, what's going on?
No, there? I was listening intently.
He was listening intently.
Sure. I'm just making sure, D-Mace. I always get sad when I don't hear from you. My life is complete. So I just like to make sure you're all good.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
He'll give you a call after the show, okay?
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great day.
Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet joining us, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, the Titans aren't the only bad team in the NFL. And we talk a lot about parity in the NFL. But it's been a long time since the NFL has seen parody like this. We'll get to that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.